This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. We finish it up at 6 o'clock tonight. And Charlie, over the weekend, it's officially official when the season comes to fruition that the 49ers traded veteran wide receiver Deebo Samuel to the Washington Commanders in exchange for a fifth-round pick. The Commanders acquired. It's a rental deal now. He's got 1 year left on his contract for $17.5 million, and it's a $31 million cap hit to the 49ers. But this tells me they are all in to try to catch the Eagles. I think they are kind of pushing and shoving money in the middle to say, we're going to go out and get a few veteran players. We got the right quarterback. This get Deebo Samuel doesn't have to be the 2023 Deebo Samuel. He's gotten nicked up a bit, but man, to add him to the arsenal along with Terry McLaurin, that running game, Jaden Daniels, and then add some pieces via the draft. And there are also reports it looks as though the Eagles are going to cut loose Darius Slay, and big play Slay may come out on the market. And who I heard is the first team on the phone with him? Commanders.
I don't want to say they're like a retirement home necessarily, but they are getting a lot of veterans on that team, Mike. And it's going to be interesting to see what they decide to do in the draft. I know that, you know, when Myles Garrett requested out and you were thinking of the teams that could be a good fit for him, the Commanders were one of those that kind of came to mind. Like Detroit, obviously, too. But Washington, I think, would be a great fit for him. They need edge help. I'm interested to see what they decide to do with the rest of the offseason because they do have more cap space to use. That's part of the reason why they were able to make the trade for Deebo Samuels because they can pay him and they can pay that contract that he has. So I like the move a lot for him. I do think that they still have options with the 29th overall pick if they keep it instead of potentially making a move for like a Myles Garrett. I think that, you know, if the back end of the first round, maybe you could be targeting another weapon in the passing attack for Jaden Daniels. Offensive line, potentially, depending on how the board falls, or defensive line, because it's just a stacked position for the 2025 draft.
So, I did hear that one of the interviews that went really well was Mason Taylor and the Commanders.
Yeah, you've been preaching that Mason's going to go in the back end of the first round.
Don't be surprised.
Yeah, but I would like the fit, too. I mean, Ertz isn't getting any younger. They kind of need I would love if Colson Loveland somehow fell to them at pick 29. I don't think it's going to happen. No. I had him going to Denver in my first mock at pick 20. That feels like a nice fit. But Colson Loveland's going to go middle of the first round. I don't think he's going to fall late first round.
Charlie, I'll be honest. I don't think he gets out of the teens.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Colts technically, but
might be a team.
The Colts? Yeah, the Colts, if Tyler Warren isn't there, yeah, for sure, because they need upgraded tight end too. Mason Taylor to the Commanders, though, I mean,
it went well. That's all I can tell you.
When you have the star quarterback on a rookie deal, it's the biggest advantage of anyone in the NFL. And so they just need to find a way to build around Jaden. Obviously, they made it to the NFC Championship game this past year. They weren't on Philadelphia's level, and Philadelphia showed that. But they could make some moves to kind of shorten the gap, so to speak, Mike. I think Deebo's a good start, but I'm really intrigued to see what they do, you know, once free agency hits because they still have a lot of money to spend, and then also the draft. And if they decide to keep their picks, maybe make a move for another star player, and if they keep their picks, what they end up doing with it.
Yeah, we're going to have to get Kelsey Nicole on and have him break down. Kelsey does a great job with that. Also, too, I know the quarterback knows Mason Taylor pretty well, too. That
oh, yeah.
So there is that connection with that. Charlie, today, and it's no surprise, we kind of saw it toward the end of one of the Fox broadcasts, but Jimmy Johnson made it official today, 31 years on the Fox network, and, you know, it was a staple for so many people watching pregame that you saw Jimmy on there with Terry and Howie, and now they've added Mike Strahan to the mix, and Gronk to it also, but 31 years, 81 years old, man, I can remember Jimmy Johnson and how shocking it was that it was Miami of Florida reaching out to him to be the guy to succeed Howard Schnellenberger. That was not the choice of the president of Miami, not the choice of a lot of people on the board of supervisors, but the athletic director was, he's my guy. And he's going to win big. And did he win? And then we saw that, what he did to that Miami of Florida program, which was already a really good program with Howard Schnellenberger. And then he goes to Dallas. And one of the what-ifs of this world, had the Eagles been able to get along, back-to-back Super Bowl titles, and, man, they could have had an unbelievable run had Jerry been able to put his ego aside and accept what Jimmy Johnson did. Great run with the Cowboys. But, man, what he did on television, too. He was so insightful, and he brought you a piece of the game from a coach's standpoint that you don't hear a lot.
No, and, Mike, I mean, we talked a little bit about it off air. Like, the NBA's got the NBA on TNT, right, with Shaq, Chuck, Kenny, EJ. And that's the best show for basketball fans. For me growing up, the best show for football fans was Fox NFL Sunday. And I mean, it still is fantastic. And all I'm saying is congrats to Jimmy on a great broadcasting career post his great coaching career. But Jimmy, Terry, Howie, Michael, like, that was much watched TV growing up as a kid and a young football fan. So sad to see him go, but I understand, you know, you're getting up there and you're going to enjoy the retired life, so to speak.
Yeah, and the fish in South Florida will see him a lot more on the water than they had in the past. When we come back, we'll have on with us from the Are You Serious Network, Blake Ruffino, who covers LSU. We'll talk about the series sweep by the Tigers and also their search for a new defensive line coach right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line from the Are You Serious Network, Blake Ruffino. Blake does a great job with us each and every time he's on covering the LSU beat. Blake, thanks so much for joining us. How much Mardi Gras on you did this weekend?
I did a kindergarten parade, Mike, and even that pooped me out more than any
Endymion party. Oh, Blake. We got to get you back in that shape for that Mardi Gras, brother. Blake, we'll
try. It's not for a lack of trying, but
I get it. we will start with the football first, about the defensive line coaching opening. And we had on, you know, Coach Jenkins last week, and he explained how difficult it was for Bo Davis to leave LSU to go to the Saints. And it was a week-long decision, is what Coach Jenkins told us. And that particular deal, now that there's an opening there, I kind of knew where they would go first with Coach Chapman, who sort of is a connect the dots. He's coached at LSU. He'd coach at Tulane now. He's at University of Florida. He's a Pete Jenkins protege, which they got a lot of them out there, but didn't get him. So where does this search turn now?
Yeah, Mike, and I think that you're going to hear something probably within the next, I would just say for happenstance, 24 hours, that Randall Joyner at Ole Miss is going to get an extension. I don't think that extension comes on or without what, you know, this decision by Bo Davis and LSU. You know, Mike, I do think that Eric Henderson's name has been thrown around there a lot. I just don't know if that's going to happen. Unless LSU just gets in a place where they got to, you know, really start making some moves here. Mike, I got to be honest with you. I really don't know. I mean, like, normally there's some conversations that are had out there about where they go. Now, I do, like you said, the Pete Jenkins route is arguably going to be something that they do. But, Mike, I really don't know where they go. I think Chapman was clearly the guy that they wanted to go after, yep. but that didn't work. But I do think that Eric Henderson, they got to circle. I don't say they got to, but I do think they're going to circle back. But I just don't know. Now, Alfred, Big Al, as he's called in Missouri, their D-line coach, being with Peoples and Davis, it would be interesting. But, you know, talking to some people around Mizzou, they, you know, like, they gave him a massive extension when Blake came the first time because that's who they didn't want to lose the most. So I really just don't know. You know, I just don't know where they go here at this late of date. So I guess we'll buckle up and see.
Yeah, one of the things, Blake, is they have to get this right. That has been a revolving door of coaches. And listen, if you leave here to go and get a better job, I'm all for it. You got to do what's best for you, if it's family-wise, financially, whatever. But this has been the fastest revolving door position on this staff along the defensive line. And in talking to a few of the defensive linemen before Bo came in, that gap of what they were being coached and what they were not being coached was huge. They got to get a guy here, one that can recruit, and two, that can be a good technical coach. Because I think that was lacking for a while at LSU, and you saw it in their play out on the field.
Mike, I'm 1,000% agree with you, especially when it comes to the consistency part of it too, right? I mean, listen, regardless if you consider edge, D-line, or not D-line, it doesn't matter. I'm going to consider it as such. This is going to be a total of seven defensive linemen on the edge or the interior that Brian Kelly's had at LSU. Mike, he hadn't been through this for 4 years. So he hadn't gone through four seasons at LSU.
Nope.
Right? Now, I mean, Mike, I'm just going to say it like I see it. This has been their biggest problem under Brian Kelly. Because if you look at the SEC losses, LSU is allowing, giving up 257.88 yards per game per SEC loss. Now, listen, I went to public school in Franklinton, and I know that my math is not off on this one because I did it, but I'm not great at math. But I know one thing, that's not good. And, Mike, it starts up front in this league. It always has and it always will. They got to be better along their defensive line. The revolving door is what's getting you beat in these big high-profile games, Mike. It's not just the defensive line, but in these games that you're losing too, what's the other big issue? Well, you can't run the football if it's not Jaden Daniels. So I think both of those situations have been a massive problem since he's been here. They got to find consistency, Mike, and they got to find it quick. And by the way, I'm just going to throw this out there. With this hire, I don't think that the defensive linemen in that room, right now are happy at all. You know, if you're Sadir Mitchell, how do you feel right now? And people are like, oh, whatever. No, whatever. He came to Bo Davis twice and he left him twice. So, Mike, they're trying to move quick because they understand what's – everybody's saying they're moving because of spring. That's malarkey. They're moving because they don't want that room to fall apart and have to go through the same thing that they did a couple of years ago.
Kind of switching gears a little bit here. You know, I just want to bring this up with you, Blake, about Cason Evans was named the SEC co-freshman of the week in college baseball. And I want to get your thoughts on how Jay's used him so far. I remember watching the game against Dallas Baptist and, you know, LSU had a commanding lead in that matchup. But then when things start to get a little bit suspect late, a couple walks, put some runners on base, the first thing Jay does, throw the freshman out there, throw Cason Evans out there, two hitless innings, gets out of a jam and he earns a save. And then against Kansas State, once again, things are a little bit hazy. Who does he rely on late? The freshman Cason Evans. I think that's kind of a sign early on this season that, you know, this LSU bullpen we've talked about is so much talent. But one guy that's really making a name for himself early on, this Cason Evans kid, it feels like he could be a closer for this team in 2025.
Without a doubt, Charlie. Here's the good thing, too. Against Kansas State, the relay that was hurting around the world, that's what we're going to call it here, okay? He relies on his defense. I think what the bullpen has done better than anything, look at the strikeouts to contact, okay? They're picking the contact, which is getting these quick outs. But I think with Cason Evans, I think he's a little I say this as a good thing. I think he's a little green, so then he's not really worried about it, and he's just doing what he does, right? And it's benefited him. But, man, I mean, listen, he's relying on his stuff. I mean, the 0-2 fastball up and in, the two-seam, for the strikeout against DBU. I mean, you see upperclassmen. You see that with schemes. You see that with upper guys that have stuff. This guy's got more confidence than anybody, Charlie, and I think that, to your point, it's not just Jay having confidence in him. I think that he's got confidence in himself, which then breeds down to everybody else.
Yeah, Jay's a creature of habit, I mean, just looking at his start, 8 innings pitched this season, 2 walks to 14 strikeouts.
That is
as a
really
freshman.
That's remarkable.
He's been awesome. And then I also wanted to bring this up with you as well, Blake. The midweek pitching staff with, you know, Connor Ware has really kind of been locking down early on. I know that William Schmidt also got his first start this past week in the midweek, and he'll probably get another midweek start this week since they have 2 games against North Dakota State. But it just kind of shows you how deep this pitching staff is when you have a guy like Ware, who Jay praised all throughout the offseason as one of the best pitchers on the staff, starting the midweek games. And then you have Zach Cowan, who was the Wofford ace last year on a team that made the tournament, coming out of the bullpen right behind him, giving a different look. You know, you have the tall lefty and kind of the shorter righty. But, you know, these two guys in midweek games have just been locked down early on. And you kind of anticipate that for the rest of the season.
You do. You know, what's going to be interesting with in this situation with Connor Ware is, because he's doing so good in the midweek, you know, if, and I'm not saying that they got rocked or anything, but, I mean, if he keeps dominating like he does, is there a situation where the rotation, you know, gets moved around a little bit? We haven't seen it yet, or there's no real reason to see it yet, but you're not in SEC play yet. How does he do in that situation? You know, another thing, too, what I think is going to be interesting, Charlie, do you move him out of the midweek?
Right.
Right? I mean, because once you get into SEC play, going with all due respect to Nichols and my alma mater, Southeastern, Connor Ware ain't going to be pitching against them now. You know what I mean? So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, in these next 2 weeks before you really get going, how they go there. And then the second question behind that is, what do you do with William Schmidt? Right? Like, I mean, I both of them, I think that you got quality guys there. And then, you know, you've kind of been a little rocky in some of these starts. But then I say that, and then Anthony Ianson comes in there and strikes out 7 of the last 8 guys that he sees. So it was rocky to start. But then I just feel like that this team, maybe it's just me early, they feel like they've been there before, if that makes sense. Like, even though there's so many new guys, even with the arms and the bullpen and everything that they're doing, they feel like they've been there. They never feel like they're out of it. And that's something that I've kind of noticed early, especially with the guys coming out of the pen, too.
Blake, I'll swing it back to football. As spring is, I mean, it's right on top of us, the practice sessions. And I think there'll be certainly a lot of look at this cornerback position, and certainly because who you got back there, who you were able to bring in the recruiting process. But I think the area I would keep a real close eye on is offensive line. Because now you've lost 4 of your 5 starters up front. And you're always going to lose a couple guys because of an injury or two. So it's building talent and talent depth. And I always think you got to play to your strength. Well, your strength's Garrett Nussmeier. I think they've underestimated what he did last year as a first-year starter. I think, you know, they wanted to see Jaden Daniels. You're not going to see that from Garrett. I thought he played really, really well last year. Now with a year under his belt, the key is to have guys that can protect him and give him a better running game. I think the offensive line is right now the one area I would want to have a long, long look at, having the right 5 and then having 2 other guys or 3 other guys that could play, because we do know what injuries do across the offensive line. It's the most injured spots out on a football field. Your thoughts entering spring and how it'll turn out along that offensive line?
Well, my guy, 1,000% agree with you, and I do think they got to be better in the interior, right? Like, I mean, let's call it like we see it there too. But Mike, there's a lot of vibes coming out right now, at least from what I hear. I mean, look, we'll be out there for practice a week from today, and the only thing I keep hearing about the offensive line is the kid out of Arkansas and Kerryus Kern. Mike, there's a video that they circulated on, you know, Faith Twitter or whatever they call it, or Snapchat. The kid's benching 225 39 times, and he's putting it on there. Now, Blake is a freshman. But Mike, when you're that physical and you're that strong, can some of these young guys that you recruited be some depth pieces that you can utilize if you need to? Now, you go and get a center, you go and get a guard from the portal. You would expect those guys to get in there. But Mike, I'm 1,000% with you on one massive thing. They got to be able to lock down that interior. If you go back and look at the PFF rush grades, most of the interior pressure, or where Garrett got sacked, did come from the interior. Most of those pressures came later in the season. They got to be better there, but they got to run better there too. So, Mike, my question is, I thought they were good at both tackles in most moments. My question now becomes, like, how much better can you get in that interior? And when it's third and three, you're not being predictable and having to throw the ball. And, Mike, they can't be scared to run the ball either, I think is a big deal too. But I agree with you on the offensive line. I really hope that they can get a little bit more physical. I just thought they were a little too passive in some things they were doing. And, look, I agree with you on Garrett. I think Garrett was not helped on a lot of the things that he did. He's got to clean up the turnovers, and we all understand that. But at the same time, Mike, the best thing that they can do to help him is get him an effective running game.
I agree with that, and I think Garrett would also. But you think about a guy who's really not been a full-time starter in college football, and to play the way he did, I mean, okay, everybody wants perfection. You're not going to get it. You strive for it, but you're not going to get it. Man, I thought Nussmeier did a hell of a job. In most games, they didn't have much of a running game. At all.
No.
To back him
up. What games did they lose? They didn't have, Mike, think about this. They averaged 50 yards rushing per loss this year.
Yeah.
Think about that.
I agree.
Like, Jaden Daniels would have that in the first quarter.
Right.
I mean, like, come on. But, you know, what's crazy about that, too, Mike, talking about the starting and first-time starter piece, he threw 12 interceptions. 10 of them came in the second half of games. Things got adjusted, and he did not know. I don't think a young guy in that position knew how to overcome the adjustments that he was seeing on the field, right? So now he gets back into a situation where he learns from that. I mean, Jaden Daniels, for crying out loud, had a double-digit interception year two, which people forget about, him to death. But, I mean, the second half piece of that, Mike, they adjusted on him. I think that part hurt him in a lot of games in the second half. But now going into that second year, the question now becomes, I mean, look, now you're getting into closer to 1,500 to 2,000 snaps here, if not a little bit more. So I do think that he's going to be a lot better there, which is going to help this team out clearly. I do think Mikey's going to have a big year, personally. I really do. I have a lot of high hopes for him.
The vibe on this baseball team, is it similar to 2 years ago? Because you think about it, and, you know, Texas A&M got a little bit of bad luck injury-wise.
They're so poised.
But how they have handled this and how Jay Johnson has handled a talented team and the bit pieces around it, because you want to try to keep everybody happy, okay? You want to try to keep everybody engaged in playing. I do think there's a lot of the same vibes. It's a different makeup, but it's similar vibes.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Danny Dickinson is a big reason behind that, too. And I think I'm going to start wearing a cross earring like I'm Ken Griffey and Danny Dickinson.
I want to see that, Blake. When that happens, just send me a text.
If you go to Omaha, I'm going to be wearing one. You can't tell my
family
enough.
Blake, thanks so much for joining us. Man, we got a lot more baseball before we can talk about Omaha. But, man, always great to have you on, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Y'all see y'all soon.
All righty. That was Blake Ruffino from the Are You Serious Network covering LSU football spring starts next Monday.
That's crazy.
For LSU. Man, it never ends. So we'll be covering that along with LSU baseball and the long ride. And like I told Coach Johnson, hey, keep me rolling till at least mid-June.
For a team with 25 new players that are playing for the first time together, Mike, that's the one word. It's what I just mentioned. They're so poised. And I mean, it goes back to, we always praise Jay, but the coaching on this team. Like, this team looks legit, and we've been talking about it for weeks now. Yes, level of competition, but the talent plays anywhere.
Yeah, and they got it. Nice to keep everybody happy.
Right.
Healthy and happy, the two H's. We'll be back with our, can't say triple option, so it'll be double coverage with Charlie Long, myself, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettay along with Charlie Long. It's our normally triple option segment, but Geller's out there in Disney World. So
double coverage,
oh,
Mike.
Oh, yeah, so it's a double coverage today. Charlie, I'll let you go first.
Mike, I'm going with Armand Membu. I had him mocked to the Saints at pick 9, and I'm hopeful that he'll be there at pick 9, but his combine was fantastic. And I wanted to share a stat. Warren Sharp, who covers the NFL, has offensive lineman prospects that ran under a 4.9 40-yard time or better at 315 pounds and a 30-inch vert. Armand Membu and Will Campbell both did that this year, and they joined Tristan Wirfs and Trent Williams as the offensive line prospects to have done that recently. And, you know, Membu's prospects profile is just so stout. He ran a 4.91 40-yard dash, the vert 34 inches. But just watching him play, and Mike, you've brought up his age as well. He's going to be 20 years old
just
on draft
20.
Night. And he's already so solid as a prospect. You have your left tackle in Taliese Fuaga.
Yeah.
And Taliese was actually a natural right tackle. He played right tackle at Oregon State. Armand Membu is a natural right tackle. I know some people say that he could potentially kick inside, but just like Will Campbell, the top two tackle prospects in this class, in my opinion, you want to let them play tackle. You draft them to Will Campbell to play left tackle. You draft Armand Membu to play right tackle. And if they fail, then you can try kicking them inside. But I think both of them are going to be great on opposite sides of the line of scrimmage. I'm taking Armand Membu to be the Saints' right tackle of the future.
I think certainly with Will, he's going to play left tackle. I mean, all this horse hooey about arm length and all that, come on.
Especially if he goes as high as some people have him going to the Patriots at 4, they're going to let him play left tackle.
That's over-exaggerated
this
time of year. You brought up Trent Williams, and I told you this, we were talking before the show, that, man, Trent Williams, when he retires, he's going to be the highest paid offensive lineman in the history of the NFL. Charlie, already he's made $196.4 million. $196.4 million.
Mike,
and he's still playing.
He just got a payday. He's 37 years old right now, and he just got a payday from the 49ers. He's still playing at an elite level, one of the best tackles in football. Yeah, I don't think that's going to slow down anytime soon.
Man, and you talk about a guy that can flip a switch. He can flip it. Trent Williams, off the field, one of the nicest guys you'll ever want to meet. Very soft-spoken guy. Man, you get him out on the field, all he want to do is kick your backside. And he's sort of, I wouldn't say borderline dirty. He is dirty at times, man. But, man, can he flip the switch? The Tennessee Titans today, because we know a lot of times we get people saying, how much would it cost to build a new stadium in New Orleans, the Superdome, all the upgrades they've done to it and everything? But the Titans' new stadium, they ran the press through it today for a first look, and it's supposed to be on pace to finish in February of 2027 at a cost of $2.1
billion.
$2.1 billion.
Wow. I mean, how much did SoFi cost, Mike? It wasn't that much. And I mean, it's a state-of-the-art facility. I think it was maybe one and a half. Let me look that up. But it's $2.1
billion. $2.1
billion. Jeez.
And, you know, come on. They want this. They feel as though they're going to grab a Super Bowl. Now they're trying to piece a team together that teams will want to visit to actually watch that team, not just party out in Nashville. And so, Charlie, you got that number on SoFi?
Yeah, SoFi was actually more than way more than I thought. $5.5 billion.
Yeah.
So
It was pretty expensive.
Right. I thought it was in the billions, but I didn't realize it was that much. But yeah, these new stadiums are insane, Mike.
Yeah, that land out in Nashville is a little bit cheaper than LA, so to speak.
That's true.
We'll be back to finish it up here on Sports Talk right after this break on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Charlie and I will talk to everybody Wednesday. We got tomorrow off, Mardi Gras. And so, Charlie, you Mardi Gras tomorrow?
I don't think so. Okay. You know, I'm not a early waker for Zulu or anything like that.
I
so.
Got you, Charlie. Yeah. But when you're going to have kids and grandkids one day, that's all going to change for
right.
you. But it's a crazy time of the year because everything merges. Think about it in a week from now. It's March Madness. It's going to clip us. Then we got spring football in the college ranks. We've got LSU SEC baseball, the NFL free agency, the draft right around the corner. It's a crazy time of the year where all these sports sort of just merge into one thing. So you get people say, oh, ask Blake more about football. Oh, ask Blake more about baseball. But it's all kind of merged in one
particular
thing.
The spring equinox. It's one of the best times of the sport calendar.
Hey, everybody be safe for Mardi Gras. Have a great time and enjoy it.